141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hello and welcome to Friday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. It is me, Stephen Mill, in for Gordon Duncan once again. And we have a big show between now and 8 o'clock. You'll hear from the Scotland boss, Steve Clarke, very shortly. We'll be chatting about Hibs appointing Jack Ross, not Ross Jack, as I said a few minutes ago. And Queen's Park voting to become a professional side. We will be speaking to their president, and I'm sure we'll have some tax chat to chew over as well. Joining me in the studio for their wisdom and insight is Craig Beattie and Hugh Keevings. Happy birthday, Hugh. How's your week? Been. Has it been all right?
It's been great, and I will approach my first programme as a 17-year-old as I did my last programme as a 69-year-old. I'll just tell you what I think. Now, tonight, the chief executive of HMRC, Jim Hara, has sent a letter to his department's accusers. He's told the newspaper in question there were no mistakes made by HMRC, which led to Rangers' insolvency. And he has accused the newspaper of, and I quote, inaccurate and partial reporting. Now, for me, this is a story of two presumptions. There is a presumption of guilt on the part of the Rangers supporters who accuse HMRC of malpractice. There is also a presumption of innocence on the part of HMRC, who say no mistakes were made when calculating Rangers' tax liability. And then, in the middle, you have the court, the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. Now, for me, they found in HMRC's favour 2 years ago. I don't think the Supreme Court has an agenda against Rangers or any other football club. They just do the law.
We had so many calls on this last night. I'm sure we'll have a few just now. So it's 0141 951 1025. And as you said, Hugh, it's not as if the HMRC chief executive is dishing out these letters very lightly.
No. And I think the way in which he has expressed himself in the letter, he clearly feels that his particular department have been unfairly treated. And when he uses the expression partial reporting, then we're into another area of dispute as well. So I freely admit, hands up, I am no tax expert. I am no temporary tax consultant. I simply believe that if the Supreme Court find in your favour, then the chances are the Supreme Court know what they're doing.
Yeah. Craig Beattie, are you a tax expert? Or
No, far from it, as it goes. Just the whole scenario is an absolute mess. It has been for a number of years now, and obviously the HMRC have issued that letter or statement today to try and clear certain scenarios up. But for me, I think we have to move on from it. We're not going to. There's no point looking back. We have to move on. Listen, it's unfortunate. There was a lot of people at the club lost their jobs, etc. The fans are tweeting and moaning about having to now watch a certain calibre of player compared to what they would have been had what they perceive of the HMRC getting it wrong. But I think we have to move on. And everything's been very, very positive recently in Scottish football, both for Rangers being back at top strength, challenging at the top of the league, and giving Celtic that challenge, which they long awaited.
There are certain stories, Craig, that fall into the believe what you like category. Now, if you're a Rangers supporter, you believe that your club has been hard done by. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs believe that no mistakes were made and that there is no agenda against any football club. They're simply going about their business as they believe to be the right way to go about their business, and they tonight again repeat that they believe they have made no mistakes or miscalculations.
And as Craig was saying, and I said this last night on the show as well, this is like 2012 all over again, and there's so many positive things to talk about the league this season in terms of the title challenge. It looks like it's going to go right down to the wire. Is it, you were here in the dark days of 2011 and 2012, Hugh. Is this like Groundhog Day for you as well?
What a twist, because the chief executive of HMRC did not put his head above the parapet and make certain things clear. So it'll obviously have a way to run. And remember that negotiations are ongoing between BDO and HMRC. and that these negotiations over the extent of Rangers' tax liability are expected to be concluded sometime in 2020.
Okay, let's go to the lines then and take our first call of the night, and we'll speak to Craig in Cumbernauld. You are live on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. What's your point, Craig?
How we doing, gents? Happy birthday to yourself there, Hugh.
Thank you.
I think, you know, I've heard this being spoke about over the last sort of about 4 years or so, and, you know, I think if there has been a mistake by HMRC, particularly in the scale that's been alleged, and I think it's important to say alleged, there are no concrete hard facts to say that actually this is the case. But if there is a mistake that has been made to that scale, then absolutely HMRC should be held to account for that, and there should be answers given to Rangers and the fans, because I think we would deserve that. However, I also think a lot of my fellow Rangers fans have overreacted a bit, because, you know, I was listening last night and there was a lot of them talking about how, you know, well, you know, Rangers would have never went bust and this would have happened and that. No one knows what would or wouldn't have happened. And it's important to point out as well, Rangers were badly, badly mismanaged by Craig White, by Charles Green, and even by David Murray before he left. He, in my opinion, has never, ever been held to account for his actions, which is utterly wrong. He was the one that introduced the EBTs. Now, other clubs have done it, but it doesn't mean that it isn't wrong and that it isn't tax avoidance, because that's what it was. And ultimately, he brought the mess into the club, sold it for a pound to Craig White, who, rather than help Rangers, actually was, you know, taken from a club that didn't actually have a lot left as it was at the time. So, you know, of course, there's a possibility, there's a world where Rangers may not have went bust. But the fact is, we were also badly mismanaged from the inside as well. So there's a responsibility to bear from Rangers Football Club as well as HMRC, in my opinion.
I think you presented your case very fairly, Craig. The Rangers fans, like yourself, probably don't need any more painful reminders of some of the people who ran the club and who did not run the club sufficiently well. But I have to go back to tonight's latest development, that the Chief Executive of Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, Jim Hara, has sent a letter to the Times newspaper, who published allegations about HMRC and has stated unequivocally that no mistakes were made. Now, if in the fullness of time anyone can prove that mistakes were made, then I think the Rangers supporters would be entitled to an inquiry into what went on. I think that would only be fair. However, as things stand tonight, you have Jim Hara, the Chief Executive of HMRC, categorically denying that any mistakes, far less any deliberate miscalculations, were made by his department.
Would you like to come back in, Craig?
Yeah, well, listen, I think, of course, the Chief Executive at HMRC is going to come out and say that. You know, he's not going to openly say we did anything wrong. As of yet, you know, there's no proof. But at the same time, I actually think as well, you know, the papers have not exactly done Rangers any favours over the years. So, for, you know, particularly in respect to this, you know, some of the figures that have been getting bandied about in the past by news outlets are a bit mad. You know, £10 million and stuff like that.
But in fairness, newspapers, they do not put together Rangers tax liability. That's the function of HMRC and nobody else. And again, to defend the media, Craig, you outlined yourself people who have been responsible for running Rangers. That's not the fault of the media. The club was passed from one set of hands to another set of hands and things did not get any better. That's not the media's fault. They were simply reporting on a club that was headed towards administration and then liquidation.
That's very, very true, and I don't deny that. I just think there's been, over the past years, and actually it's funny that this comes out in this week, because actually over the past week on this programme, you know, I've heard a lot of Celtic fans come on talking about Rangers' finances because of this loss as well that was apparently made. And the fact is there is an obsession, and has been since this happened with Rangers, with the finances at the club. And it feels like at times, from Rangers fans' point of view, like people are just waiting for when Rangers go bust again. I mean, Celtic fans are hoping and praying Rangers go bust again. That's why they're so obsessed.
I don't,
it seems like the media are the same.
I don't. No. But bear in mind here, it was the media in the form of Times Scotland who brought this story to light, alleging that there may have been a serious miscalculation. It was the media who brought that to light.
No, I'm not saying, to clarify that, I wasn't saying that the media were hoping for Rangers to go bust again. I think Celtic fans are. I'm saying that the media have had an obsession with Rangers finances as much as anyone else has over the past few years as well. But like I say, for me, it is, you know, all of this Celtic fans constantly talk about, oh, what about Rangers losing this? I mean, there was a guy on Sunday who literally said, would you think Rangers losing 8 million? And then hung up, because they're obsessed. They want Rangers to go bust again.
But I don't dispute what you say, that there are some, and not all, because a lot of Celtic supporters would not want to see anything happen to Rangers, because ultimately it is not good for the state of our game. So I would have to make that case on their behalf. Of course there are some who wish Rangers ill, as there are Rangers supporters who wish Celtic ill. That is just the nature of the rivalry between the two clubs. But when you have a story as big as the story of Rangers and the problems that they encountered 8-9 years ago, of course it becomes the biggest story in the land, because Rangers and Celtic are the two biggest clubs in the land. And if something of that magnitude happens, it does get exhaustive media coverage.
Well, as it should. I just think some of the media coverage has not always been fair, because, you know, I think people seem to forget throughout the whole process. And I remember, you know, 2011-12 when this was going on, and, you know, the treatment of some of the people within the club as well as the fans. Even somebody like Alan McCoy, a club legend, in my opinion, was treated appallingly in that time. But people seem to forget, and I think the media seem to forget, the time when this was being reported, not always in the kindest of terms, that you were talking about fans here of a football club. Now, yes, when Rangers went bust, it hurt. But it hurt more that they went bust and this idea was still being plugged along and fueled by the media about how, you know, obviously they're not the same club anymore, they're a different club. Technically, that's true. But to the thousands of people who support, to the 50,000 plus who go to Ibrox, and actually, you know, even when they were in the third division and the second division and the championship, they were still getting, you know, 30,000-40,000 bums in seats at Ibrox. So people were still passionate about.
And I've made that point. I've made that point time without number. But Craig, you know, this is, as I say, the classic believe what you like story. There'll be Ranger supporters who believe that HMRC have conspired against the club and brought about its insolvency. And now you have HMRC stating publicly in a letter from the chief executive that no miscalculation was made.
Well, they are going to defend their position. The fact is that if a mistake was made, and I suspect that, you know, some sort of mistake was made, because I don't think the bill is as high, and I don't think that...
What are you basing that on, Craig? What are you basing that on?
Well, I'm basing on the fact, I think Gordon Dale was saying it last night as well. To me, when you hear some of the figures come out, if it is a true figure, then it just reflects even worse than Rangers. But for me, the idea that a club of Rangers' size, which bear in mind, at the time, we were still in Europe, but we were only a couple of years removed from being in a UEFA Cup final, so it wasn't as if money wasn't coming into the club, and I don't think that just EBTs alone would amount to, you know, a £70 million plus pound tax bill. And I also feel like, what does this paper that's released this actually have to gain by making this allegation? All right, okay, readers, I suppose, but there's no reason for anyone to make up a lie. The HMRC made a mistake.
The difficulty that you and I and everyone else has here, Craig, I don't even fill in my tax return because, like everyone else, I'm wary of HMRC. So I take my tax return to an accountant and he fills it in and I pay him for it. That's how unsure I am of how to go about my business. Therefore, I could not stand here in front of you and tell you, oh, well, I know exactly what Rangers' tax liability should be. I don't. I expect that to be worked out by the appropriate source. And if they have got it wrong, it will come out in the wash. But all I can tell you is that as of tonight, the chief executive has written to the newspaper in question and said, no, miscalculation has been made. And furthermore, he's also accused the newspaper of partial reporting. I'll let the two of them sort it out.
Craig, thank you very much for your call tonight, pal. That was very insightful, very balanced there. Thank you very much. And enjoy the rest of the weekend, all right? And that's he's away. So, yes, it was... Yes, we've managed to make it through the first part of the show. That's the tax bit over with. We are going to get on to Scotland a wee bit later on. But final point, you know, and I said this last night as well, there is so many good things on the pitch to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just not about time that even for Rangers fans, and we had a couple of callers last night, just wanting that to be water under the bridge. That's all in the past. We need to concentrate on this season.
I think the story is too big.
And winning the title.
No, the story is too big. Because Rangers supporters feel a deep sense of anger that it should have come to this for their club. And therefore, if they suspect for one moment that there was any miscalculation, then they want it investigated thoroughly. On the other side, HMRC say there was no miscalculation. Now, we must let everyone debate the point. And if anyone can prove categorically, unequivocally, that a mistake has been made, let them come forward.
Exactly. I'm sure we will be revisiting this in the weeks and months and years to come. It's never ending. But next, we will move on and chat about Scotland. We'll be hearing from Ian McCall on Lauren Shanklin. We'll have a wee chat about the strikers as well. And we'll be joined on the line from a Scotland fan in Cyprus as well. Don't go anywhere.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Welcome back. It's Stephen Mill in for Gordon Duncan. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie. Right, on to Scotland then. Two qualifiers of what has been a pretty miserable campaign so far. Cyprus, 2 p.m. kickoff tomorrow, and then Kazakhstan on Tuesday night. Hugh Keevans, it has been a terrible, terrible campaign, hasn't
it? Yeah, we're now talking about two games that are virtually meaningless. They're not totally meaningless because we're looking to build any kind of momentum, any kind of self-esteem before we go into the playoffs in March. But we're threadbare with so many call-offs. I think Stevie Clark now has to rely on those who have been having a good season. John McGinn, Ryan Jack, Ryan Christie, James Forrest, Callum McGregor. These are the guys he's got to lean on. And also, for me, take a chance on Lauren Shanklin up front, because square pegs and round holes is not what a manager's looking for. Just put the round peg in the round hole. Shanklin's a striker. If he has a poor game, strikers do from time to time. If he has a good game, then his confidence grows.
We're going to hear from Ian McCall, the Partick Thistle manager, who obviously worked with Lauren Shanklin at Ayr United, and we'll get onto that chat in just a wee second. One of the other issues, obviously Andy Robertson is out. Who's going to captain the side, Craig B?
I listened to Steve Clark earlier on today, in one of his interviews, and he said that it would determine his team selection before he was going to name the captain. That for me would probably suggest it would be one of the outfield players, possibly Callum McGregor. For me, I think it should be David Marshall. You know, he's got a number of caps, he's very experienced, he's a good talker. You know, having to organise an ever-changing back line, it's obviously not going to be for the long term. So I would like to see him go with the experienced David Marshall.
He did address that, as you say, Craig Beattie. So let's hear from the manager, Steve Clark, now.
I think I'll keep that one under wraps till tomorrow. Obviously, it'll depend a little bit on team selection as well. So we're not going to give out the team today. So you'll find out tomorrow. And I've always been, as a manager, even as a player, I feel that everybody in the dressing room should be a leader. Everyone should try and take on part of the role of the captain. It's not something that should just be down to one person. You know, you want as many leaders, as many positive people as you can in the camp, and that's what we're trying to build here.
How frustrating have the call-offs been, and what have you had to do to make sure that it doesn't impact too much on the squad?
No, they were frustrating, obviously, at the start when you name your squad and then you get the call-offs. It's frustrating, but I'm learning quickly in this job. You have to move on. I've got 23 players here who want to be here. They all want to be part of what we're doing. They're all here. They're all trained well this week, and I concentrate on those 23. We've got two games before the March playoffs, so anybody who's here in camp has got a great chance to catch my attention and make sure that they're in the squad in March, because they have the opportunity to make themselves pickable. You know, if they do well for the team now in this camp, these two games, then there's every chance they'll be involved in March.
That's the only thing we can really get out of this sort of double header, Hugh, isn't it? Maybe somebody who's not in his thoughts can play their way into his thoughts ahead of March.
I think it's unfair to suggest that players are now ducking and diving where the national team is concerned. I honestly believe McTominay obviously injured, Andy Robertson obviously injured. You know, it's wrong to suggest that anyone is less than enthusiastic about playing for their country. If you're honest with yourself, like Robert Snodgrass, and say, look, my time's up here. Matt Ritchie never gave you the impression that he was desperate to play for Scotland, but at least he's said, right, that's me, my time is up. That's fine. If you decide that you, for whatever reason, don't want to play anymore, fine, just declare yourself. But I believe that those who are there are volunteers, and that they're not there because they've been conscripted.
Yeah. And in terms of those players, this is an interesting
I'm not so sure. Again, I read an article today, and it was Steve Clark's assistant, and he'd actually used the phrase, they're genuinely injured, which to me suggests that he's making a case for the players who are injured just now that are genuine. But that to me suggests that there's probably been instances very, very recently where he doesn't quite think it's been so genuine. If he's having to emphasise that these players are now genuinely injured. Steve Clark said in that interview there that the players that actually want to be here. So I'm reading into what they're saying here, and I think there's another message in there that, you know, there's times that the players don't want to be there or might not be genuinely injured.
Well, can you think of an example?
Listen, I'm not going to call anybody out because they most certainly haven't. But I'm just listening to what they're saying here, and I'm just not convinced that all is rosy in the Scotland camp right now.
Well, McTominay left the field in a stretcher.
Yep.
Andy Robertson is there for everything, and if he feels that for once he has to bow out, I think he's entitled to that call.
Yeah, listen, again, I'm absolutely okay with that. But what I'm saying is his assistant is then, for me, alluding to in squads gone by that the players maybe haven't quite been genuinely injured.
Yeah, and obviously we're only two games away. I know it's been a terrible campaign, but we are only two games away from qualifying for Euro 2020. Do you think that he'll have the same problems when it comes to selecting his squad for next summer, if we do get there?
It's very much hypothetical. You know, if we're playing against England, for example, on the weekend, would the squad be as it is just now? Would we have as many call-offs? Would there be, you know, people not wanting to play for their country or retiring from international football during a campaign, which is probably not the greatest timing for me? I'm not so sure here.
I think those who have retired have definitely said, I can't be bothered with this anymore. And they've gone and publicly declared themselves. We've got grey areas like Stephen Fletcher, who I believe does not want to play for Scotland, and he can phone up and contradict me if I'm wrong. But he's a grey area. He, for me, just doesn't want to play for us. But the bottom line here is that we've got who we've got. We're going to have to rely on the players who've been doing big things this season, and that's, as I say, Christie, McGregor, Forrest, Ryan Jack, John McGinn. I think John McGinn would make an excellent Scotland captain for no other reason than he's got a real greeting face, John.
He certainly does, yeah. If Stephen Fletcher is listening, by the way, it's 0141 951 1025. Let's hear what Steve Clark had to say about just finishing as high up in the group as we can.
We're working towards a target. We have a definite target in the group to finish in third position. And we have a definite target come March when we have the qualifying games that give us a second opportunity to get to Euro 2020.
Obviously, you've had a few changes at centre-half in the last, every game, I think, just since you came in. And obviously it'll be a change at left back as well now. Has it been difficult to get that momentum at the back, or do you feel everybody knows their job well enough that it doesn't really matter who plays?
I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to put in a structure and a way of playing that no matter who the personnel is, they understand what's expected of them in the context of the team performance. So hopefully you saw that in the last couple of games, and hopefully you'll see that in the games going forward.
It sounds like, you know, he is trying to, he knows there's going to be call-offs and he knows there's going to be players who won't be available all the time. So he's trying to work with what he's got, as we were saying, Hugh, but implement a system that he probably did at Kilmarnock and had far more time to implement it than what he does at international level.
At the moment, it's very, very plain. We are indifferent at the back. We are indifferent up front. And in the middle, we're packed with good players. I've never known such a time. But I have to believe that even though it's Cyprus away, it doesn't matter. We have to be better than Cyprus, even with a slightly threadbare squad like this one.
We've never lost to Cyprus, Craig. Do you see that happening tomorrow?
No, I don't, to be fair. So I think we're going to get a positive result tomorrow. But just touching on what you mentioned about Steve Clarke and Kilmarnock there, that was the one thing that stood out for me, that all the players knew their role at Kilmarnock, and it didn't matter what the personnel was on the match day, they knew their role within the team. And I was excited about that when Steve Clarke got the Scotland manager's job. Now, Cyprus, we got a very, very late winner by Ollie Burke to win the game 2-1. And you could see initially at the start of the Cyprus match what we're looking to do. I think one of the first phases, the right winger for Cyprus got the Cyprus got the ball, and Andy Robertson initially went to run out and go and press him the way he would at Liverpool. He then put the brakes on and he stayed in his left back area and he waited in Ryan Fraser to come back and actually press him, and they kind of doubled up on the wide player, and I thought, right, okay, so the manager's been working with him, they've identified how he wants to play defensively, and it started to work. Now the problem he's had is since then we've had Belgium, Russia, both twice, and we've had a doing. So after sort of seeing signs initially of what Steve Clarke was trying to do, we've then played two very, very, very good countries. The last game, San Marino, you win 6-0, you're kind of expected to. Now I think Steve's under a wee bit of pressure this time, in terms of, I think the country really wants to see now, because we're not playing against Belgium and Russia, what we've actually been working on. We want to see what your formation is, we want to see what we're going to do in terms of the Nations League final in March, because this is the last two opportunities to prepare for these games.
But can he be judged accurately, Craig, when you've got
McTominay
out, when Robertson,
when the squad's depleted? No. And you know, we're going to be working with the squad of players that are available just now, and literally it's all he's got. But come March, the squad's going to be totally different again. Oh, yeah. There's arguably five or six starters not going to be there. Now, you know, do you take them along, like say Tierney, Robertson? Do you meet up with the squad? So you're listening, you're in the meetings, you're listening to what the managers want to do, how he's wanting to play. Has he got scope to do that? Would their clubs allow that? I think there has to be scope for them, for the players actually being there, being present for a certain period of time.
We've got a major problem at the moment, insofar as when we've played the Russians and Belgians, we don't just lose, we get a doing. We've got withdrawals from the squad, people retiring from international football. There's a feeling that Scotland doesn't grab everyone the way it used to, and that applies to fans as well. Mm-hmm. And we need to boost our self-esteem, and qualification is the only way to do that. If we fail to qualify, we have hit the bottom of the pile.
Hugh, in an absolute nutshell, what you've just said there is, I spoke to a friend of mine on the way in here tonight, and he actually said he's got two tickets for the match on Tuesday night, and he's not sure if he's going to go. He's got two complimentary tickets. Three, I beg your pardon. He's going to take his two children, and he's not sure if he's going to go. And I think that's where we're at as a nation. I think we're low in enthusiasm. Now, is that the fault of the players? Is that the fault of the manager and the team? Or is that the fault of the fans, you know, as a collective, you know, collective group of fans? But whatever we do, we've got to get some sort of enthusiasm back there towards the national team.
And we need to score goals. And the man who probably will be tasked with doing that tomorrow, we're hearing, is Lauren Shankland. Ian McCall worked with him extensively at Ayr. This is what he had to say about him.
Well, I thought he should have been in it 6 months before he was, and I said so. You know, you're not going to get a boy capped at Ayr United, which is wrong, but there you are. No, nothing will surprise me, that boy. I think he'll go from strength to strength. He's people
I think a lot of people still don't realise what a good footballer is. A lot of people, apart from people that have worked with him, they just think he's a goal scorer. He's a lot, lot more than that.
Is that quite a proud feeling for you, knowing that this was a guy that you brought in and nurtured? That's
Well, listen, Lauren's done 99% of it himself, but I've spoken to the family and his girlfriend and him, and I mean, I think all the players that played with him at Ayr and the staff there will all be very proud of him.
Craig Beatty, is he who you'd be starting up front tomorrow?
Listen, I really like Lauren Shankland. I watched him particularly close in the San Marino game, and what I really enjoyed about watching him was his movement. I know he scores a lot of goals, and he's actually far better than the Scottish Championship, where he's playing his trade at the minute for Dundee United. I watched him with the mindset of being thinking outside the box. You know, I didn't just want to see him scoring tap-ins. I was watching his movement. I was watching how he was holding the ball up, how he was linking it, little movements in the box to lose defenders, and I was really impressed with him. However, the fact that he's playing in the Scottish Championship, with all due respect, he probably wouldn't be my first choice to lead the line for the national team at the minute. Ollie McBurney, who I think is a good player. I think he's lacking in confidence at the minute. He's only got one goal in English Premiership this season. I get that he's in a Sheffield United team in a very, very tough English Premiership, but he had 24 goals last year in the English Championship, which is a really good return, as well as countless assists, and I do think Ollie McBurney's a good player.
For me, I'll take Shankland. McBurney, yep, I can't argue with Craig's stat about the goals he got last season. However, I just think that at the moment Shankland's hot.
Who is right, Craig Beattie or Hugh Keevans? 0141 951 1025. Is it Shankland or is it Ollie McBurney up front for Scotland tomorrow? We'll also chat about the centre half pairings as well. We'll do that after we get the latest on the roads with Amber next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's Stephen Mill in for Gordon Duncan. Another big talking point in Scottish football today, then, the appointment of Jack Ross as the new Hibs manager. Initial reaction, Hugh Keevans?
I think it's a good appointment. It didn't go as well as we expected it would for Jack at Sunderland. Lost the playoff, and then results were not good enough and he lost his job. That happens in football. But it doesn't mean to say you can't bounce back. And he's clearly impressed Ron Gordon, the new Hibs owner, and Leanne Dempster. And I think that he will be a safe pair of hands for Hibs, and I wish him all the very best.
Craig Beattie, is it a concern that he's never managed in Scottish football's top flight?
No, I don't think so, because where he has managed in Scotland, he's managed very, very well. You know, he's a clever guy, and he's also a very, very good coach. So again, to reiterate what Hugh said, I think Hibs will be in very safe hands with Jack Ross at the helm.
We have Bobby on the line from Gourock. You're a Hibs fan. Bobby, are you a happy man today?
Do you know what? I probably am, actually. I think I'm happy that we've acted decisively, because the lesser club in Edinburgh looking for a manager as well. So, I don't, do you know, there's a bit of chatter about whether he was interviewed for the Hearts job. I don't know if that's true or not, but, well, he's east of the road now. I don't look at his record. I don't really remember a lot of him at St Mirren. But what I do remember at St Mirren was I seen a St Mirren team under Alex Ray, I think, before Jack Ross took over, and they were dismal. And I think he took essentially the same players and built them into a team that was hard to beat, and then was winning games and ultimately won the league. So, yeah, do you know what? I'm hopeful. I think he'll do a lot of the simple things. I heard you mention earlier about Scotland, about square pegs and round holes. And I think that's been one of our biggest problems this season, is that we had a manager who was very, very rigid in the formation he wanted to play, and we probably didn't have the players to play that formation. And I think that Jack will be more, I think he'll be more flexible.
I think it was a slightly easier appointment for Hibs to make than Hearts, to be fair, because Hearts are looking to put a sporting director in place before they name the manager. Hibs have their infrastructure all taken care of, but lacked a manager. They made a shambles of it with Neil Lennon. They then appointed the wrong man in Paul Heckingbottom. They have, for me, appointed a safe pair of hands in Jack Ross. I think it will be good for him, good for the club, but Bobby, you'll know yourself, there are bits of dead wood there that need to be moved out the road at Hibs.
Bobby, I think you made a good point there with Paul Heckenbottom and his tactics, because I think we seen in the weekend there that for the first time in a long time Hibs went two up front with Camberi and Doidge, and you know, it seemed to do the trick, because Hugh's favourite player Doidge got a hat-trick on the weekend. So it does appear that he's been a wee bit stubborn with the kind of lone strike of the 4-3-3 formation, and then obviously the change on the weekend by Eddie May seemed to have worked wonders.
Do you know what? Absolutely. And I think that it was the League Cup games. My friends were saying to me, this guy's not going to work. Do you know that there's big problems here and he's not changing? And I was like, nah, do you know what? The guy's got a really good background, his master's in sports coaching. He'll be looking at the feedback after the game and he'll change things. But I think when what happened at Ibrox, it's interesting you're talking about Neil Lennon there, Hugh, but can you imagine a Neil Lennon Hibs team going into Ibrox after losing 6-1? He would kill them. Do you know? And it was like, do you know, it was just like, oh, well, we lost 6-1, let's move on to the next game, which is great, you know, like in terms of psychobabble. But, do you know, it's like, that's not what you want. That's not what you want. You want the players to actually... that's not acceptable.
I'm not sure that Paul Heckenbottom got Scottish football, got Hibs. He got the fans on his back when he made what he thought was a flippant remark about Scott Allen. The fans didn't find it to be funny. And on the park, the performances were not good enough, and they looked very weak when they lost to Celtic in the Betfred Cup semi-final. So all in all, I think it is a good appointment, and now Jack has a full week to prepare Hibs for the end of the international break and the resumption of league football, because, as you well know, Bobby, where Hibs sit in the league right now is not acceptable to you or any Hibs fan.
No, absolutely not, and I think that when you look at the budget that we've got, and even the players, do you know, it doesn't stack up. Do you know, there was something seriously wrong there. And yeah, do you know, it's like, I mean, one of the stats that just was going in my head when I was like waiting to speak to you there was that we've not kept a clean sheet in the league since the opening day of the season. If we'd kept even a couple of clean sheets, Paul Heckenbottom would still be in a job. Do you know, we'd be 6 points better off, or 4 points better off, but we wouldn't be down where we are. But do you know, 11 games without a clean sheet, That's a serious problem. I actually agree with you about it didn't get Scottish football, and I think that he might, I don't think he'll ever be back in Scottish football, but if he was, I think he would make a better stab of it next time, knowing what he knows now. But one of the things that for me, when I came to the manager, what I wanted was somebody that had an understanding of Scottish football, because our failures, Pat Fenlon, Colin Calderwood, our managers that came in with no knowledge of Scottish football, and I don't think you necessarily need the knowledge of Scottish football, but it's a long curve to get there if you've got your preconceived ideas and you're not going to be flexible.
Well, that's not a problem that will afflict Jack Ross. We do take your point on board about the last time Hibs kept a clean sheet. Take the other side of the coin as a positive hope for the future, that against a very, very good Celtic side in the Betfred Cup semi-final, Hibs still scored twice, and also they scored five times last time out against St Johnstone. So all is not lost.
Absolutely not. And Jack Ross, that is confirmed. 3.5 year deal he has signed at Easter Road. Bobby, thank you very much for your call. 0141 951 1025 is the number. Scotland under 21s are also playing tonight at Tynecastle. It's Scotland under 21s against Greece. And our reporter Andrew McLean is there.
Thank you, Stephen, and good evening from Tynecastle. Scotland's under-21s playing their fifth match of Euro 2021 qualifying against Greece, and they're looking to continue that unbeaten run that they've had so far to the campaign. Two wins and two draws from their opening four matches. Scott Gemmell's side just behind the Czech Republic at the top of the table on goal difference. And the nation that finishes in top spot after 10 matches qualifies for the tournament automatically. You can still go through in second place as well. The best runners-up go automatically into the tournament, while the rest of the second place teams go into a playoff. This is a good chance, though, for Scotland to go top of the table tonight if they can beat Greece, and they'll open up a 4-point lead on their opponents tonight as well. They've built their campaign so far on a good foundation of defence. Scotland just one goal conceded in their opening four matches, only four goals scored though, so they'll be looking to add a few to that tally tonight. As for the team news, Ross Doohan starts in goal. It's a back four of Jamie Brandon, Barry Maguire, George Johnson and Daniel Harvey. The midfield three, Alan Campbell, Lewis Ferguson and Billy Gilmore. And it's going to be Jordan Holsgrove out wide along with Stephen Kelly. And the striker up top is Fraser Hornby. The substitutes, Wright, McCrory, Reading, Middleton, Smith, Campbell, Scott, McLennan and Henderson.
We'll keep you updated if there's any goals there. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff at Tynecastle. The one name that always sticks out when we talk about the under-21s is Billy Gilmore. Oh. I've heard so much about him from so many different people, and he does really look like one for the future. But again, he's a centre midfielder. Like, we've just produced loads of them over the past wee while at this time as well.
Yeah, we need a Mo Johnson, an Ali McCoist, yeah, a Dennis Law, a Frank McAvaney. Send us a goal scorer.
Yeah, please, please. Right, we are just a few minutes away from this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Okay, it's a very special Beat the Pundit tonight. It's Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie. You'll be taking one of them on just after 7 o'clock. And thanks to our friends at Migo Sports and Muir End, tonight's Beat the Pundit contestant will win a fantastic five-a-side team prize. So to celebrate their 10th birthday celebrations this weekend of Migo Sports, the Southside sports retailer will kit you out with your full five-a-side team in specialist football top, shorts and socks. And the prize is for 7 players, so even your subs will look the part as well. Migo Sports is open from 9:30 tomorrow morning through to 5:30, with celebrations, cake and all the rest of it to mark 10 years of business. So pop in and say hello if you're in the area. How are you feeling tonight, lads? I heard of Beat the Pundit. Are you confident?
Always confident.
I've had a wee look at the questions. Craig Beattie, what you think?
Yeah, won my last one convincingly. But never confident. I get really nervous doing
always
this.
Always confident, never successful.
Well, I get very, very nervous, and the amount of times I actually get picked to do it's incredible.
Gordon DL won last night, so
listen, anything's possible.
Anything is possible. If you want to give us a call, it's 0141 951 1025. If you want to take on Hugh or Craig, we will do it next. You have until the end of the news to get your calls in.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompsons.com.
It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard on Friday night with me, Stephen Mill. I'm in for Gordon Duncan. Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie are in the studio. Coming up between now and 8 o'clock. Craig, you've been ruffling a few feathers this week with an interview you did on the telly, so we might get into that. If you're a Celtic fan, I'm sure you've got an opinion on that. 0141 951 1025 is a number if you want to maybe challenge what Craig said earlier on in the week. But it's time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It is Beat the Pundit, your chance to take on either Hugh or Craig. And joining us on the line, tonight's contestant, it's David from Woodlands. How are you doing, David?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Anything exciting happening on your Friday night apart from this?
Not much. We're really just having a quiet one, making the dinner shortly, so not much.
Well, David, it's about to get a wee bit more exciting, because just for getting on the line, you have won the five-a-side team prize from Migo Sports. So you're going to kit it out with football top, shorts and socks, and that is 7 strips thanks to Migo Sports. So you're a five-a-side player, please say yes.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go, good answer. Right, who do you fancy taking on tonight, either Hugh or Craig?
Hugh, please.
Right, okay, well, no, you don't get what you want, but we'll flip the coin. So, Hugh, you will be heads, and Craig, you'll be tails. So here we go, flip the coin, and tails never fails, apart from tonight, because you're taking on Hugh, it was heads. So, Craig, you can relax. I can see you sweating from here, big man. Right, okay. So, I will put Clyde 2 into Hugh's headphones, and is that in your headphones? There we are. So, you are up first then, David. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, you have 30 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now. Which Scottish side yesterday voted to end their amateur status?
Queen's Park.
Who was today appointed Kilmarnock's head of football operations?
I'm not sure.
other than Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are the only other club never to be relegated from the Spanish top flight?
Valencia.
Which country won the 2002 World Cup?
Brazil.
What is the nationality of Celtic defender Aboli Bolingoli?
French.
Right, David. You hang on the line. We will bring Hugh back into the studio. Are you with us, Hugh?
Good.
Okay, right. Are you ready for your questions, Hugh?
Okay.
Your 30 seconds begin now. Which Scottish side yesterday voted to end their amateur status?
Queen's Park.
Who was today appointed Kilmarnock's head of football
operations? James Fowler.
Other than Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are the only other club never to have been relegated from the Spanish top flight?
Atletico Madrid.
Which country won the 2002 World Cup?
Germany.
What is the nationality of Celtic defender Bolly Bolingoli?
Austrian.
Which Scottish side play their home games at Balmoral Stadium?
Oh, pass.
Who are the current champions of Portugal?
Benfica.
Out of time. Do we give him that, producer Dan? We do not give him that. So let's bring David back and we'll go through the questions. So the first question was, which Scottish side yesterday voted to end their amateur status? It was Queen's Park. You both got that one right, so one each so far. Who was today appointed Kilmarnock's head of football operations? It was James Fowler. Hugh, you passed on that one, David, so that is 2-1 to Hugh. Other than Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are the only other top flight, who are the only other club, I should say, never to be relegated from the Spanish top flight? You said Valencia, David. You said Atletico Madrid, Hugh. It was Athletic Bilbao.
Ooh.
Athletic Bilbao. So still 2-1 to
That's
Hugh.
A tough one.
Which country won the 2002 World Cup? David, you said Brazil, which was the correct answer. They beat Germany in the final. 2-0. What nationality is Celtic defender Bolly Bolingoli? David, you said French, I think. Was he said, I think?
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't really sure on it.
You said Austrian, Hugh, and if you'd sort of gone not quite in between, but a wee bit further north, Belgium. He's from Belgium. Which Scottish side play their home games at Balmoral Stadium? That is Cove Rangers, Hugh. You were the only one who got to that question, which means you both got two. So it's a tiebreak.
There you go.
I now have a major confession to make.
Okay.
I was at the 2002 World Cup final.
Brazil won 2-0.
Aye, 2-0. Ronaldo scored twice.
Yeah.
Right. So, the question in terms of the tiebreaker is as follows. And since David went first, you can go first with us as well. Celtic and Rangers are both dreaming of Europa League final glory in Gdansk. As the crow flies, what is the distance between Glasgow and the Polish city in miles? David, you go first.
David has to... I actually write my answer down and then David has to give his. So
right, okay.
Just as well, you never said anything there, David.
You write your answer down then.
Right, repeat the question then.
Celtic and Rangers are both dreaming of Europa League final glory in Gdansk as the crow flies. What's the distance between Glasgow and the Polish city in miles? So Hugh, you write your answer down. And David will come to you in just a wee second. So, David, what is your answer?
1,500 miles.
1,500 miles. 1,500 miles to be precise. That means that Hugh, you have won tonight because the answer is 907 miles. So you are closer.
I put down 1,350, I think.
You did. 1,350. Yeah. Just to clarify, Craig Beatty, can you clarify?
Absolutely.
That was the answer that was written down. So sorry about that, David, but a not bad try. You got to the tiebreaker. Not too bad at all. All right.
Cheers. Was good fun.
Thank you very much. How can a man go to Yokohama for the World Cup final and not remember who won it?
You do have the five-a-side kit from Migo Sports as well. So well done, David. Enjoy your night. Thanks very much, pal.
The red wine must have been delightful over there, Hugh.
So,
Mark Greedy's fault.
How many World Cups have you been to, Hugh?
Three on three different continents. 1994 in the United States of America, 1998 in France, and 2002 in Japan
and Korea.
And Korea, yeah.
Yeah.
Opening ceremony was in Korea. What a occasion that was.
Do you think you'll make it to another one with Scotland? Qatar, next up.
I'll be happy to make it to December.
Right, we are taking your calls tonight. 0141 951 1025. Now, Craig Beattie, I put my phone on during the week,
right?
And I went on E12 and I was going through what was trending, and I saw Craig Beattie's trending. What's Craig Beattie been saying to? And then I clicked on it, I went, oh yeah boy. Right, so Craig Beattie, what did you say that led to all this stuff during the week, all this?
What did I say, or what did the headline read?
You're rowing back now.
So the headline on Twitter was, former Celtic player Craig Beattie questions, have Celtic got the bottle for a title challenge?
Yep.
That was the question posed.
Okay.
On the headline. What I actually said was, I was speaking to a very well-regarded journalist who had said that if Rangers were in the same position they are now, i.e. a goal away from Celtic at the top of the division with four games to go, would they have the bottle to see out a title challenge? So I then flipped the question on him and I said, well, what about Celtic's bottle? Because for me, other than once when kind of Graham Murray was in charge, Celtic have been very much unopposed in terms of winning the previous eight titles that they've won. So for me, it'd be unfamiliar territory, it'd be uncharted waters for the current Celtic squad, should they be in the same position with three or four games to go with only a solitary goal splitting them. That was all I said. I stand by what I said, but obviously I've ended up trending on Twitter because of it, as you've well mentioned.
If you have a different opinion, then the number is 0141 951 1025. Craig Beattie questioning the bottle of Celtic. So the headline said, Hugh, what do you make of it?
I think it was a perfectly legitimate point to make. Celtic have had it all their own way for 8 years. Absolutely their own way in terms of the league championship. If with four games to go there was some dubiety about who was going to win the title, then of course temperament will have a large part to play. And if you have been unused to something for 8 years, then when you're suddenly confronted by it, then of course it's a bit of a big moment for you where you have to readjust. I think it's a perfectly legitimate point to make, and the same would apply to Rangers, because they've, in terms of winning major trophies, they've done nothing for 8 years. Therefore, if you're four games away from winning one, your temperament comes into question as well. So I think it's a perfectly reasonable point, but it will infuriate the Celtic supporters who believe that this will go on and on and on forever.
Yeah.
And any Rangers supporter who disagrees will be accused of not knowing what they're talking about, because they've never been there for years and years.
As suspected, the phone lines have lit up. 0141 951 1025. Let's speak to Brian in Pollock. What would you like to say to Craig, Brian?
Craig's changing what he said the other day already.
Go on.
The other day when he said that he never qualified it with the Graham Murray, about the Graham Murray season.
Yeah.
He never mentioned that the other day.
No, you're absolutely right.
But the season that Aberdeen took us into the final four games, was it? And barring that, you've got guys like Scott Brown, Fraser Foster, James Forrest, who have been there 6-7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And won titles then when Rangers were in the league.
Uh-huh.
So
the rest of them haven't, and also think that...
I think that shows that they've got the bottle.
Yeah.
They know how to win things. How many times have Celtic been behind in cup finals and produced? So how can you question that bottle?
Well, I'm questioning... Listen, first of all, Brian, first of all, it's hypothetical, OK? So we're talking about three or four games to go with Rangers being as strong as they're shown at the minute. You know, Celtic have not had a challenge from Rangers, right? Rangers have not realistically had an opportunity to win the league recently. Now, all I've said is, with three, four games to go, if they have an opportunity this year, now other than the three players that you mentioned, the rest of them are fairly inexperienced in terms of being put under massive pressure. Scott Brown, James Forrest, they've all been there. They've shown that they can handle pressure in situations, international situations, domestic situations. It would be silly to question that, because they've won the last nine trophies out of nine. So to suggest that I'm not aware of that would just be stupid. And for me to go on television or radio and say that would just be stupid. But hypothetically speaking, with three or four games to go, I think, and Hugh's rightly pointed out as well, Rangers would be asked the same questions. Now, If Rangers are in this position with three games to go, I think they've probably answered that they would be up for a challenge, having sustained it for 32-30 games of the season. But that would be uncharted territory for Celtic, who have been pretty much unopposed so far.
What about the cup finals when they've been behind?
I'm talking about the unprecedented, or the 9 in a row with potentially 10 in a row. I'm not talking about cup finals. The hypothetical question put to me was about 3 or 4 games to go with the league if Rangers were challenging Celtic. Nothing to do with cup finals, nothing to do with runs in Europe. It was solely, hypothetically, this season to do with Rangers and Celtic, given the fact that Rangers are as strong as they have been in a decade.
If, Brian, the clubs were neck and neck, separated by a goal as they are now, and there are four games to play, is it unreasonable to suggest that temperament might come into it on both sides?
Brian, sorry, let me just add something else. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting Celtic don't have the bottle. Celtic might go on and win their last 3 or 4 games and win the league by 3, 4, 5 points potentially. I'm not suggesting they don't. What I'm suggesting is, at this point, hypothetically, with the majority of the Celtic squad, we're unclear. So Celtic may well go on to win the remaining games.
But the situation that you've just described with going for 9 in a row, nobody's, unless we want to go back to the Rangers team of the 90s and the Celtic team of the 70s, nobody's been through that. So how could anybody possibly approve that they can go through that?
Well, that was a question that I posed
decades ago.
No, but I go back to my point, Brian. What is insulting about this for you? 4 games to go, same number of points. Well, you're on and you're
putting words in my mouth now.
Well, how would you react then to what Craig has said? How would you sum up your emotions?
My emotions?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't say I got particularly emotional about it, but I found it amusing. I would say that more than anything else.
Right. Well, I don't think it's amusing. I think it's a perfectly valid point. 4 games to go, same number of points, separated by a goal as they are now. Well, what's the problem in saying that one of them might slip up temperamentally while acknowledging that Celtic for the last 8 years have shown temperamental strength of a very high order? However, the difference is that for the last 8 years, by and large, they've had it all to themselves in the running. But it's a hypothetical question. 4 games to go, same number of points. Wouldn't you think there might be an element of doubt there?
Here's the problem, Hugh.
People are welcome to doubt it, but just with you bringing the temperament into it, Hugh.
Yeah.
I think over the last 5 or 6 years, what Celtic have proved is their discipline and temperament is spot on. There's not one time that I can think of in the last 4 or 5 years that you could say the Celtic team have lost their discipline.
Have they been, within 3 games of winning 9 in a row?
No.
No. So going back to my initial point, this would be uncharted waters then, which may introduce an element of a different type of temperament from what we've seen previous. The problem is, because I'm a former Celtic player, as soon as the headline didn't read particularly great, uh-huh. The context of what I said, I don't think is particularly bad. You know, there's 2 former players who was on working with me on the weekend, completely agreed with what I said. I've spoke to a current international player from the Scotland national team, fully in agreement with what I've said.
Yeah.
I've got the legend of journalism in the studio, completely agreeing that what I've said, that there's nothing wrong with. The problem is because I've used to play with Celtic, they see the headlines, they think there's something sinister in it, and all of a sudden you trend on Twitter. And to be fair, the abuse I got on Twitter after it was absolutely unbelievable.
Let's speak to Andy from Cambus Lang. Do you back up what Craig's saying? I suspect you don't.
Hi, good evening, panel.
Hi, Andy.
Craig, absolutely not. Hi, Craig. 100% not. Craig, a couple of weeks ago, you turned round and categorically said, when Celtic drop points, that's not the form of champions. 100%. Now you're backtracking, and what you're saying is that if Celtic don't get into that predicament, then they might or might not win the title. So make your mind up. They're either good enough for the title,
right, hold
or
on.
They're not good enough for the title.
I'm not suggesting...
No, you hold on, Craig. No, you turned around categorically.
Yep.
When Celtic drop points, I remember you've seen it. that's not the form of champions. How is that not the form of champions?
I'll tell you how it's not the form of champions.
Hold on.
Go on, finish off, Andy. Go on.
Okay. We went to Ibrox. We've won. So 100%, we've already beat Rangers in their own backyard, right? Which is great. Great confidence booster. Okay, given we've dropped points, we were down to 10 men. And obviously we've dropped other points as well. But my point to you is, Craig, how is that not the form of champions? And obviously with regards to the point that you were saying to the last call...
Let me address your first point, Andy.
Okay. You go
how
then.
Is it not the form of champions? Me and Hugh stood in the studio here and watched Celtic away to Hamilton. They won 1-0. The performance was poor, to say the least. I then questioned if they would get through the season performing as poorly as that away from home. They then went to Hibs and drew and were very, very poor. So they've got £1 out of possible
four.
We're in agreement. They went to Livingston and lost the match.
Hold on a wee second here, right?
Go on.
Let's break each match down individually then. Right, fair dues. They went to Easter Road and dropped points, right? Which is fine. You can have an off day. But we got a man sent off at Livingston. So it's very difficult to win against 10 men. But for you as an ex-Celtic player to come round and say, that's not the form of champions. You're backtracking, Craig. We've won 9 out of 9 trophies, right? We've beat Rangers this season, right?
We're not talking about the previous 9 trophies. The form of champions now.
Right, wait a minute. Well, let's look at Rangers' form.
I'm not interested in Rangers, Andy.
But you're digging Celtic, saying that obviously they're not good enough.
Yeah, because 4 points out of 9 is not the form of champions, and that was said 2 weeks ago.
Right, so are you saying 100% Celtic will win the title then?
No, I'm absolutely not. I've not said Rangers will win the title. I've not said Celtic will win
the
title.
What do you mean you're no? You've just turned around and said that's not the form of champions. So either they are going to win the title or they're not.
Andy,
the basic point here is that Craig was asked if with 4 games to go, the side's level.
No, sorry, cutie, but in there. That's not the point I'm phoning up tonight about.
The reason why we brought up this line of conversation is because of something that Craig said on radio and on television earlier this week. That was specifically the question of, with 4 games to go, the sides are level, and Craig's point was, well, be a test of your nerve then, if you're Celtic and you've had it all your own way. He does not dispute that it would be the same test of nerve for Rangers, because they haven't won anything of a major nature for 8 years. Therefore, that was all he was addressing. 4 games to go. Now, the problem that Craig Beattie has, and the Celtic supporters know this to be the case, Craig Beattie played for Celtic, then he went away and he played for Hearts and he scored an important goal against Celtic and he celebrated. And for that reason, he must spend the rest of his life in sackcloth and ashes because he celebrated a goal scored against his former club. Not good enough.
Well, thank you to Brian and Andy. I thought we'd get a few calls on that. We might keep this going. 0141 951 1025. Let's talk about something else just for a wee change.
Clyde One's Cash for Kids Wishing Christmas. In partnership with Wholesale Domestic Bathrooms Hillington. Proud to support Cash for Kids.
Okay, so we are approaching Christmas and it's time for to be a wee bit settled and think about maybe something else. And time for families and for celebration, making friends and, you know, making plans with your friends as well. This is what we're all doing this time of year. But unfortunately for thousands of children across Glasgow and the West, it is just another day. We want to make Christmas Day a different day for these kids, and that means that Cash for Kids Mission Christmas is back for 2019. And the difference can mean money in the meter for the electricity. It can mean a hot meal or maybe even a small gift as well. You can make this happen by supporting Clyde One's Cash for Kids Mission Christmas, and you can fundraise on your own, clydeone.com. You can download the pack there and you can make a magical day just by giving that little bit extra this year to thousands of kids across Glasgow and the West. So it's Cash for Kids Mission Christmas with Wholesale Domestic Bathrooms Hillington and Clyde One. To donate money to this year's Mission Christmas appeal, you can head online now, right now, to clydeone.com. Right, we'll continue to take your calls after the break. 0141 951 1025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Welcome back to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. It's Stephen Mill in for Gordon Duncan, Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie. An embattled Craig Beattie in the studio after that last section there. We're going to go straight to the lines and speak to Billy from East Kilbride. How are you doing, Billy? You all right?
How are you doing, guys?
What is your Billy. Point tonight, Billy?
My point is to come on and defend the embattled Craig Beattie. I think what he said is absolutely 100% correct. This Celtic side have never had a close run challenge, so you don't know how they're going to handle that. And I can understand the Celtic fans getting up in an uproar about it, but if they just look back to Helicopter Sunday, which was arguably a stronger side than the one they've currently got, and all they had to do was match a Rangers result or beat Motherwell at Fir Park and bottled it. So it is a challenge there that this team have never met.
Well, in history, I would go back to Celtic winning the league at Paisley against St Mirren when Hearts were 7 minutes away from winning the title. So it can work the other way around. But I think we've just lost the place as usual. The only point being made is that Rangers and Celtic, both, four games to go, both will need to show nerve. And there's no point in saying, but Celtic have done it consistently for the last 8 years. We're all perfectly well aware of that. But for me, the dynamic has changed a bit. For the first time in the eight in a row, going on nine in a row of Celtic get the title, for the first time in those years, I think there is a proper competition. I don't think they've ever been run close, but I think they will be this season. And then, of course, once you're into the last five games of the season after the split, you're playing theoretically the best teams there are, and it will all get very tense. And that's the only point that Craig Beattie was raising.
Can I come back in at that?
Go on.
Yes, I understand what you're saying about the eight titles, and I'll say something that's very poignant for the moment. That was eight titles with no challenge since the now questionable and orchestrated demise of Rangers.
Now, you're using orchestrated. You can't prove orchestrated. Also, if Rangers are out of the top division, the competition does not go into a state of suspended animation. Celtic, to use the football expression, can only beat what's in front of them. So, if Rangers aren't there, I believe there was one season where there was no Rangers, no Hearts and no Hibs. But that's not Celtic's fault. Celtic are running their business properly. And if you're not in the league, then you're not in there for a reason, and it's not Celtic's fault.
Craig, there is another person who agrees with you, I believe. Andy is on the line, and you're from Denniston. How are you doing, Andy? You all right?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thanks. Yourselves?
Yeah, not too bad. Do you think Craig's got a point then?
I think he certainly does. I can't understand the barrage of negative responses he's been receiving. It goes to show, if you look at the league table, it speaks for itself. It's not been this close for a long, long time. Probably not this decade. There's a definite point to be made there. The pressure will be on both teams come May, if it remains as it is. I just can't understand all the negative reception he's getting from Celtic fans. He's just he's stating a fact.
Well, you have to take personality into account here, and he's disliked by a lot of Celtic fans, so that has to come into the equation. However, for me, it's a question being raised about both teams. Four games to go, level points, of course temperament will come into it. And that's the only point that Craig is raising. He's not saying Celtic will fall apart, they will collapse, there'll be a mental breakdown. He's not saying that. He's saying for both teams, you better have your game head on for those last four matches.
Yeah, and hypothetically at the end of the season, I could very well stand here again and say Celtic showed tremendous bottle. So again, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute Rangers will win the league. I'm not suggesting Celtic will win the league, because quite frankly, I have no idea who's going to win the league. And right now, it looks like it's going to go to the wire.
You like to come back in, Andy?
No, I was just wanting to voice my support, because I just can't understand how people would question his statement. I mean, if the league is looking like this, 3-4 games to go, both teams will be under immense pressure. Rangers obviously don't want Celtic to get another 9 in a row. Celtic desperate for ultimately the 10, but need to get 9 first. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it goes at the end of the season.
Yeah, and that's all that Craig was saying. That push will get to shove, and you better be ready for it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to Andy. Let's say good evening to Brian, who joins us on the line from Moodysburn. Brian, you're a Celtic fan. What is your take on this?
So, guys, I don't actually have a problem with what Craig's got to say. I think, obviously, when you talk hypothetically, it's not fact. So everybody can make up things, and they can also think what's going to happen. I think the thing for me, Craig, is when you say that almost that Celtic have been unchallenged. Now, I get that, but that's no Celtic's fault. But you should know better than anybody that to win as many games, play as well, win as many trophies, as many leagues, it takes a certain team and a certain character. So I think to say that they've been unchallenged isn't Celtic's fault, because nobody's taken them to the last 4 games and it's been a goal in it. But I think obviously you've been a wee bit disrespectful, not only to the other teams in the league, but also to Celtic, because it does take a bit of character and a bit of bottle to be able to win so many titles and so many cups. I know you're only talking about the leagues, but I think it's a wee bit discerning to Celtic to say because you haven't been challenged, it might be a bit different.
Yeah, listen, I get what you're saying to an extent. Am I being disrespectful? I don't think I am. It does take a lot to win trophies, to win medals, to win league after league, game after game. I've got absolutely no question it does. I know it does. But you've kind of acknowledged some of my point there, Brian, when you your initial point. Listen, it's again, I can't reiterate. I've not said that Rangers are going to win the league, Celtic are going to win the league, and to be quite frankly, I don't actually care who goes on to win the league. The conversation was just a bit of a hypothetical question about come the end of the season, it's going to take a bit of bottle. Now, Celtic have showed tremendous bottle to win a treble, to win a double treble, to win a treble treble. There's absolutely no question of that. But to go on from 8 in a row to potentially win 9 in a row, which would be absolutely massive in central Scotland, there's absolutely no question it would be. And if there was a challenge from Rangers, at the end of the season, then it will take a different type of bottle to get over the line.
You want to come back in, Brian?
I definitely. This is something to ask Tate. Tate, when was it you were actually at Parkhead? What years was it?
2001 to 2007.
Right, okay. So I've got a wee story to tell you. We were at one of the training days at Parkhead. My daughter's now 21. And all the players, was that busy? All the players got their cars brought into the park.
Uh-huh.
And Craig, you were the only player that stopped that day and got out of your car and gave the fans signatures and photographs, and you're the only one that stopped for my daughter that day. So
All right.
I definitely don't have a problem with you. I think you're a good guy, mate.
Listen, I appreciate that then. And to be fair, all the way through my career, I've done my absolute damnedest to give somebody a picture or an autograph and be as polite as I possibly can, because I'm under no illusions that the fans, they sort of go a long way to pay your wages, they support you, and you know the Celtic support were fantastic with me while I was a player at Celtic, and you know hopefully I've made your daughter's day that night.
Listen, it's on the dart ball tonight, but I got the photograph.
I can only imagine it as Brian.
Right, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Brian. You have no idea. My finger was hovering over the dumb button there. I wasn't sure where that story was going. Thank you very much to Brian for giving the call. The lines are still open, 0141 951 1025. That is one thing that we definitely do have this season. And, you know, it's, as you said, it wasn't Celtic's fault that there hasn't been a big title challenge over the past few years. Aberdeen got closest. I think it was 4 or 5 games to go. You know, I think there was a big game at Parkhead in the March, I seem to remember, and then it sort of fizzled out. But we do genuinely have a proper title race between Celtic and Rangers this season.
I've been going through my memory, dodgy though it may be, for big moments at the end of a season. And there's always a photograph of Neil Lennon that's used by newspapers because it's such a graphic demonstration of one man's frustration. And it's the night in Inverness when he kicks the bottles up into the air. Now, Celtic went to Inverness, and had they won that night, they were pretty much sure of becoming champions. Chris Coman scored twice, but Celtic contrived to lose 3 goals. And it was a major, major setback on a night when they really ought to have won. And these things happen. And that's all that Craig was saying, that with four games to go, you've got to be right and there can be no Inverness moments. And that's all. You know, the same applies to Rangers. Here we have a club, and I keep on using it, the expression, they're looking for a tangible sign of their improvement. And that tangible sign is the Betfred Cup, the Scottish Cup, or the league, which is the number one thing for the Rangers supporters. So if they are level with Celtic and there are four games to go, and one of them, in all probability, will be against Celtic, the pressure on Rangers to end those long years without a major success, and particularly without the league title, and therefore the chance to qualify for the Champions League, the pressure on Rangers will be tremendous as well. The pressure on both will be tremendous. I cannot find it in myself to think that that is a derogatory statement.
Absolutely not. So we're going to continue this. 0141 951 1025. We'll get into the last part of the show in just a wee second. Also, a bit of news that came out last night as well. Queen's Park will no longer be an amateur club. It was one of the quirks of Scottish football, 152 years of history. You were at their first game, of course.
I was,
back in the day. And they had a vote last night, 200 members, and it was overwhelming. And we can speak to their president just now, who I believe you know, I believe.
Well, I don't know Jerry, but I've read him in newspapers, and Jerry Crawley, and a very sensible man.
Let's hear from him.
There's principally the three main reasons for the loss of the rights to play at Hampden Park when we move out, having sold the stadium. That means there's a major draw to come and play for the club has gone when we move to Lesser Hampden. There's also our youth system. When our young players get to the age of 18, clearly as an amateur club we're not able to offer professional contracts, and therefore the aspiring young players are free to go to other clubs, and Queen's Park are not compensated for that, and we're looking to really change that because we feel that the aid to develop those young players, we should be compensated in some way. So turning professional or having the ability to offer professional contracts will help us in that area. And thirdly, increased competition coming from the Lowland League and clubs such as Cove, Edinburgh City and others to come means a real increased threat of long-established senior clubs falling out of the league. We didn't want to be one of them. And we believe that being able to offer professional contracts can allow us to plan and build a squad which can be competitive and hopefully deter that threat.
What do you think, Hugh? Are you sad at this news, or are you...
They're still there. Mm. That's the important thing. The club is still there. They might have moved a couple of hundred feet in the opposite direction to Lesser Hampden, but they're still there. And I think Jerry Crawley makes a very impressive case there. The loss of Hampden Park means that, you know, those who get a thrill out of playing for Queen's Park, because it was Hampden Park, might look at Lesser Hampden in a different light, but not when Queen's Park become a fully professional senior club and start paying wages. So I think he makes a very persuasive case. They were a nice anomaly, but they were an anomaly. And now the threat of dropping out of the league altogether is a real and present one. And Jerry Crawley and everyone at Queen's Park are reacting to that in the right way.
Yeah, listen, I listened to Jerry there and I couldn't agree more. And to back up what he's actually said, when Queen's Park got relegated from League 1 down to League 2, I was playing in League 2 at the time. And without a shadow of a doubt, the first thing I'd done when the fixtures came out was I looked at the fixtures to find out when I would be back at Hampden. Oh. So it must have a massive pull. The away teams, they love going to Hampden because 99% of lads have never played there at Hampden. Obviously, I've been fortunate enough, I've played there with Celtic, Hearts, Scotland, and it's just a wonderful place to play football. Although you play there against Queens or with Queens, and it's, you know, there's 200-400 people there. Yeah. But still, to go on and play at the National Stadium is a little bit of an honour. And even when I was thinking about retiring, when I was at Elgin, you know, I had a wee look at the fixtures and stuff, and it was on my mind that, you know, we had Elgin Queens Park at Hampden on the 22nd of December last year. And it was on my mind to bow out at Hampden as well. So it definitely has a pull.
You wanted to score and take your top off one more time, is that what it was?
No, I think we'll leave that one unique.
And let's not forget that Andy Robertson went to Queen's Park when he was released by Celtic, and so began a fairy tale story. Let's not forget that Lauren Shankland, who in all probability play for Scotland tomorrow against Cyprus, he's a former Queen's Park player. They have made their contribution to Scottish football. and they want to continue making their contribution to Scottish football. And the best, the safest way to do that is now to forego the amateur status and start paying their players.
0141 951 1025. We'll be taking your calls in the final part of the show after the break.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Welcome back to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. It's Stephen Mill in for Gordon Duncan. We are in the final part of today's show, or tonight's show, I should say. And just to let you know about Rangers and Celtic, they're obviously going very well in the Europa League. Celtic already qualified, and Rangers on the verge of. And Clyde One and Ladbrokes are with both sides, home and away, throughout the campaign. So to celebrate Clyde One's coverage of Celtic and Rangers in Europe with Ladbrokes, go to ClydeOne.com for your chance to win a stunning home entertainment system. Right, we are, you know, we're on a football phone in, and nobody wants to talk about Scotland.
Mm.
What does that say about the state of the national team and the way that fans are looking at the Scottish national team at this moment in time?
In this part of the world, in West Central Scotland, the obsession is with Celtic and Rangers. In one corner, Neil Lennon doing terrific things for Celtic. In the other corner, Stephen Gerrard looking to bring Rangers back to the forefront of Scottish football and doing a terrific job this season. That consumes West Central Scotland. The Scotland support tends to come from out with West Central Scotland. And I think in this part of the world, people see the international break as an irritation. They see it as an unwanted interruption to the championship race. And the bottom line is that at this time, we don't have a good enough team and we don't get good enough results. And that never helps either.
Yeah, listen to you. I watched or listened to a very, very intelligent Barry Hearn, owner of Matchroom Sports, talk at an event one day. And he actually discussed Scottish football and the future. Now, what he was proposing, what he was motioning was, now I don't claim to be a businessman, but what he said made very, very good sense. And given the fact he's made tens of millions out of a big room, a lot of alcohol and an hockey with the darts, that he's probably worth listening to. Now for me, there should be as few empty seats as possible on Tuesday night. Now if it means going round the local schools, you know, boys brigade clubs, girl guides, whatever it may be, and get tickets out there and get people in to Hampden and try and get the future involved, you know, and you might not reap the benefits now, you might not be 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, but in 10, 15, 20 years' time, you may have Scotland fans, the paying Scotland fan, you know, coming through at the game, creating an atmosphere, cheering the lads on, which helps to an extent. Of course, the team need to be performing well, but you need to appeal to the youngsters, the generation now, to try and get them involved, get them engaged in the Scottish game.
Just to clarify, we were meant to do a teaser tonight, but Craig Beatty, you took over, so there will be no teaser tonight. We ran out of time, unfortunately. I'll be back on Monday. But just to go back to Scotland just for a second, you know, the point you were making there about trying to fill the stadium as much as possible. You know, I'm a Dunfermline fan, so I've seen us play in League One, finish seventh in League One. But I still went to see them. I still went to see them every week. Is it just the fact that the ties between your club are not quite as strong as between your country?
Let's be honest, you know, 20 odd years of non-success don't help. You know, France 98, the last time we were on the major stage. The team right now, while it does have exceptional talents like Kieran Tierney, like Andy Robertson, Callum McGregor, James Forrest, you name it, but we are not successful. And when we've played Russia and Belgium, we've been given a hiding. And that doesn't inspire confidence, and people don't like to be associated with something that's easily beaten. So Stevie Clark has a big job in his hands, and that's why I say qualification for Euro 2020 is essential, because non-qualification will be seen as our national side having hit the bottom of the pile.
Under-21s are in action at Tynecastle against Greece at this moment in time. They have had a go. It looks like it might have been chopped off there, so it's just before half-time. Looked like, I'm not entirely sure who it was that knocked it in for Scotland, but I'll get clarification on that just a wee second. But Stephen has joined us on the line from Parkhead, and you want to talk about the title race. So, Stephen, what is your point?
How you doing?
Hi, Stephen.
No, it's just I'm on here nearly every night listening, and basically the full panel has predicted that it's going to go right to the end of the season, and I just don't know where they're getting that for after 12 games, because it's neck and neck. Now we've not even had all the Firm games yet.
No, you're right, but what we've had so far in the first sort of quarter of the season suggests that it's going to go to the wire. Listen, are you a Celtic fan, Brian?
Yes.
Right. So, Stephen, I beg your pardon, Stephen. So, listen, I'm assuming that you think Celtic are going to run away with the title. Is that fair to suggest?
Of course, and I don't get how anybody can stop us for thinking that because of what's happened in the past. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't understand it. Forgive the Celtic fans for having swagger. I'm thinking we're going to win it because we've seen it all too many times for Rangers. And then they fall away. Do you know what I mean?
You completely deserve to have swagger given the success you've had in recent years.
Of course.
Yeah, well, I'm agreeing with you. You're going for 9 in a row. You've won an unprecedented treble. So you are 100% entitled to have that swagger. But what we've seen so far this season is a much, much stronger Rangers. And at the minute, there's a solitary goal that splits the two teams at the top of the division. So I think as a journalist or somebody in the media, it would be silly to stand here and suggest that one of them could win it by a wide margin.
What's Celtic going to do in January, though, with a suggested £30 million that they've got? You've got to ask yourself that. Do you know 100%, what I mean?
100%, and we'll probably have another conversation January, February, March time after the transfer window.
Stephen, you're raising a hypothetical situation there. What will Celtic do with that money? All that Craig Beattie was doing when he started this trouble was addressing a hypothetical situation. There's no one here suggesting or stating that the teams will be level on points with four games to go, but Craig was asked a hypothetical question and gave a hypothetical answer, and now you have said hypothetically, what will Celtic do in January with all that money? I don't know. It will depend on whether Rangers are still on their case. At that point, Celtic will spend because they have the money to spend. But it's hypothetical up until then.
The good thing, Stephen, when we're talking hypothetically, is that we are both right. There's no facts.
That's the way we like it here on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Thank you very much for having us on tonight. Obviously, big game tomorrow in terms of Scotland. Quick prediction for you. We've never lost to Cyprus.
Tomorrow is Scotland's 777th international. 777. Let's hope it doesn't end in 999.
Craig Beattie.
How do you want me to top that?
Let's end
the show on that, Stephen.
Exactly. So there'll be full coverage on Monday. All the reaction to it. No Super Scoreboard tomorrow or Sunday. It's a weekend off for the lads. Hope you have a good one, whatever you're up to. We'll be back on Monday night, 6 p.m. Ready for your calls, 0141 951 1025. And have a cracking weekend, and let's hope it's a wee bit cheerful and Scotland get all 3 points tomorrow. GBX next.
Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompson's.com.